Welcome back to the Build Different podcast. Man, we are in deep in the heart of Texas, Dallas, Texas, Irving to be specific today. Really excited to be joined with the Austin crew here. Appreciate you guys making the time. We just, the sun just started shining through the four tower cranes that are out here. Man, if you that doesn't get your blood pumping out on site.
I said every crane in the state of Texas seems to be on this job, which is it's a good one to come to.
It's a good place to start. Well, this season we're specifically focusing on the field, and we got some really great guests that we're going to glean from today with Zach and Todd. I just appreciate you guys. We kind of took over this little conference room in here. This is nice. We're kind of like tucked back here in Trailer Village.
I think this is the most trailer village of the podcast episode so far.
I like it. Even the parking spots were labeled. We knew exactly where to go. We're like,
hey, we had paved parking.
Yeah.
Classy out here.
We're not playing around.
Okay. Living the life. This is awesome. Well, Todd, I'm going to kick to you. I've wanted to get out of the way for these intros. I would love just to kind of hear your background a little bit, how long you've been with Austin, and we'll get over to you, Zach.
So my name's Todd Harper. I've been with Austin since 2010. Started my career as an architect. From Louisiana, went to LSU, came to Dallas because I felt like with an architecture degree there wasn't going to be anything substantial I could design in Louisiana. I mean, big buildings over there were four or five stories at the time, and I didn't want to live in New Orleans, so I was like, let's go to Dallas or Houston where we can drive back home. We were pretty close to our family, so wanted to be somewhere we could drive. We didn't have to fly. And so came to Dallas, started my career as an architect, spent 10 years on that side of the business, got registered, worked on a bunch of cool projects, which is kind of how I got interested in tech. I was working for a firm called Good Fulton and Farrell, and we were doing Crate and Barrel home stores all over the country back when people were building brick and mortar. And Crate was they had German backing, and they were very interested in high design, especially for those type of stores. And the guy that I worked with, we worked in two-man teams, and the guy that I worked with was pretty forward-thinking as well. In fact, he's their construction manager now, John Moby, so I'll give you a shout-out, Crate, in Chicago. And we were always looking at how we could do things more efficiently. So that's when architectural desktop was starting to come out. So we had 3D CAD, but now we could slice a building. And Crate was, they were known that you had to do so many wall sections in their construction documents. So that's where I started kind of really pushing tech. And John was, he was all about it as well. I was under him as my project architect. And then as I go around to the country, all over the country, we would do a lot of, Crate would spend a lot of money on CA. And I was exposed to all these different subcontractors in different parts of the country with different levels of expertise. And that's right around when Autodesk bought Revit, and it became apparent to me pretty quick that, the sell for the design team was you're going to have a better set of documents because you could chase the details and the tagging. But on the construction side, I was looking at what was happening on these jobs, especially those Crate jobs, and thinking about all the detailing we had to do and how we had to explain the detailing, and said, if we just had a 3D picture of this or an exploded detail of this. And so that was probably around 2006. I made a jump from architecture into construction with J.E. Dunn. And then a buddy of mine who was a golf buddy who used to be the president at Austin Commercial, he called me one day and said, hey, we're thinking about building a virtual construction department. And that's how it started.
And that was 2006?
That was 2010.
2010.
So we've existed within Austin, and we've been building this group, Austin Edge, since 2010.
Love it. That was great. Yeah. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Mm-hmm. Tigers.
We've had a few guests, myself included, who have started in the architectural world and mm-hmm. all found ourselves, here in construction and from various reasons. But it's fun to wonder if we could round out the season with every guest.
I was just going to say, maybe we need a tagline that says all roads lead to construction. man, that's great. Zach, lay on us.
Yeah. Zach Dennison started my career 11 years ago. I went to Oklahoma State straight out of college, moved down here to Dallas. I'm originally from Oklahoma City. My whole career has been with Austin, fortunately. So. Started as assistant superintendent, kind of worked my way up to the chain to senior superintendent where I am now. But yeah, it's been very enjoyable. And
that was much shorter.
Yeah, that I was I don't have as much many years as he does.
I cut like 15 minutes off of that.
mine's pretty cut and dry. Hey, so
maybe what have you been building? What did you start with, and kind of highlight some of the jobs you've worked on since then?
Yeah, so I started my career out on State Farm Phase 2, which is located over there in Richardson. I'm actually both phases, Phase 1, Phase 2. Then I went out to Toyota, the Toyota headquarters out there in Frisco, Pioneer Natural Resources, TI, RFAB 1.
You're talking about these like RFAB small 2. Jobs.
Yeah, I mean, these kind of big ones.
I mean, these are like headquartered, I mean, Toyota, right? Yeah. My backyard here too. But yeah, I mean, those are all pretty giant corporate campuses, which, you know, we're out here today too. So.
Yeah, and I just came from a smaller hotel job in Fort Worth, Bowie House Hotel. So, and then Hall Arts downtown, the hotel as well. So,
two very nice hotels.
Yeah, I mean, he's being pretty modest over here today.
So, it's not just on the commercial office side, it's hotels, I mean, the RFAB, the semiconductor fab plant, and then commercial office space.
Pretty wide range, too. I'm sure we'll get into this, too. But, and how long have you been on the Austin team?
It'll be 11 years in July.
11 years, okay. Yeah.
And maybe just a quick hit on what this project is.
Yeah, Wells Fargo, 11-story, 10-story, 11 with a roof, two commercial office space buildings. We've got a 1 million-square-foot parking garage directly across the street. But yeah, this is going to be another big office complex for the Wells Fargo, obviously the banking corporation.
Do you have like a corporate scoreboard that you're just like slaying these logos off here? I mean,
checking them all off.
Yeah.
State Farm.
Toyota. Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, it's really, you pull up on site here and it's pretty ominous, right? I mean, four tower cranes, mobile crane, probably doing some other exterior site. I mean, what's kind of been your take as you've gone through those different projects? Like, did you kind of want to go in each of those directions? Obviously, like, some of it's probably your say of going from experience and stuff like that. But
yeah, so just kind of more into my background. No one in my family's in construction, by the way. My mom's an accountant, dad's principal. So I got my degree, construction management, from Oklahoma State, and had no idea what I was doing right out of college. And when I say no idea, I didn't know anything, which kind of was. Hoping my bosses aren't listening, but
you're here and they are looking at your scoreboard.
Exactly. Yeah, so when I started on it, it's a lot of having to teach yourself and learning. Kind of, you put in the work. You're as good as you want to be in this industry. So, I mean, you can ask questions, but it's kind of, the more questions you ask, and those older guys kind of looking at you, they're going to be like, "Well, this guy doesn't know anything." So you kind of fake it till you make it, but you're also teaching yourself while you're going, trying to learn as much as you can, almost like just being a sponge, trying to take in as much information as you can to be able to teach yourself. And that's kind of how I've gotten to where I am today, is just by, you work your hours, six to five, 6 to 4, whatever it might be. But when you go home, it's still working. And my wife, I get in trouble for that a lot.
We got a lot of launch points here.
Just teaching yourself is basically how I kind of brought myself up to where.
Did you have an internship at Oklahoma State?
I did, and actually interned with a competitor, Manhattan.
Hey, nice.
In Oklahoma City.
So. Oh, in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
This is a random right turn. Tallest tower going to be in Oklahoma City. Have you heard about this?
Yes. I don't know. Is it actually going to happen?
You're fact-checking me, which I appreciate.
I haven't heard about this.
It's supposed to be like the tallest building in the United States.
Yeah. Huh.
Which Oklahoma is incredible.
City. Isn't it Salesforce out in San Francisco right now, or is that just west of the Mississippi?
Salesforce is in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Guys, we're hard left in here.
Yeah, but sorry.
Oklahoma City, that's my... when I heard that, I was like, Oklahoma City?
Yeah.
You're the first one I've met after heard that. So, and then after Oklahoma State came here, straight out, school. Okay.
Yep.
One more question just that popped in my mind, like, why construction? Like, construction management, like, how did that kind of come to be when you're considering?
Man, I don't really have a good reason. I guess I kind of like to build things, put things together, take things apart, build them back.
Did you know someone at Oklahoma State to like go? I mean, obviously, it's close to Oklahoma City.
No. Are you happy with that decision still?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I don't know what I'd be doing.
Have
if
you
I
seen
didn't
his scoreboard?
This,
so. Come on.
I know, right? The you resonated well with me with you know, fake it till you make it kind of thing.
And yeah.
I've told lots of, you know, younger people and whatnot, like getting into this industry, it's very much feet to the fire.
Yeah.
It's very much just throw you in, sink or swim. There's a million different cliche, you know,
absolutely,
saying versions, but it's nice to hear that resonates, you know, yep, across the country too.
Any favorites on that scoreboard? I keep going back to it, but yeah,
I was going to go that route too.
I mean, they're all kind of, I mean, State Farm here feels a little similar. Toyota, that's a amazing, like just huge campus project.
I can't really pinpoint.
What was the hardest one? What's the one that scarred the most?
Probably the Hall Arts downtown, really? The hotel. Yeah. Mm. That one was a challenge for
and
sure.
Todd, you've seen all these too. So, I mean, don't be quiet over there. I know you got some opinions
about
those.
I'm just letting Zach shine.
But a lot of ways that I've learned as well is by, I've had such good mentors in the company. The older superintendents, shout out Al Severson. I can almost guarantee you he's not listening to this.
The
one,
legend.
But,
we'll the tag legend. Him. He can come back.
Yeah. But just learning under him. Obviously, I was an assistant and he was senior, so I didn't get to work with him as much, but there was always a middle superintendent in between there. But just watching him, watching those older guys on what they do on a day-to-day basis, how they work with people, how they manage their people, that's what's helping me out.
So how many soups do you have out here on this job? Or I guess where do you kind of rank in?
So I'm second in command out here. Yeah. So Nick Simpson is head superintendent out here, and then my other senior, Mark Villarreal, and then we've got five or six assistants, superintendents.
Wow. So, how many of your guys' staff is out here on this job? I mean, Trailer Village, it's pretty full.
Probably close to 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Somewhere okay. there.
And how many from your team, Todd, are out here?
Just one.
Man, that ratio. It's killer.
Yeah.
But
she's pretty
rock star.
Yeah.
She's rock star for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Do you feel yourself in a mentorship role yet?
Yeah, I'm getting there for sure. Have to be. As a senior, if you're not mentoring people, you're not really doing your job. So it's part of your job to teach the younger guys, bring them up as fast as you can to try to get more work and build more jobs. So yeah, for sure.
Farming the crop of the kind of the builders behind you.
Yep.
All right, let's get into some good stuff, fellas. That's a nice little background. I like that. Let's talk about tech. Let's talk about innovation. Let's talk about this job. I mean, you guys are just blitzing all the things out here, I think, from just the trailblazing on the tech side, innovation. And I'm curious to know kind of your guys' relationship of, like, Todd, you kind of set in the – I was asking Zach earlier, like, hey, how much do you guys interact? What's that kind of looked like? I kind of want the listeners to hear a little bit of the dynamics between – you kind of being the forward facing out there looking at all the stuff that's kind of on the horizon, and Zach obviously being the consumer out here of a lot of the tools. That maybe just kind of give the listeners a highlight of what it's looked like. Maybe we can hone in on this job specifically, but how have you guys kind of worked together of, hey, this is working well. Hey, here's something that we kind of see as gaps that we could use some, not even just tech infused, but just other ideas and workflows and stuff that's helped these guys out here.
So for me, where I interface with Zach probably more is on the R&D stuff, on stuff that we're kind of testing or piloting on we're not using it across the enterprise. We might be using it on certain project types or in a certain business unit. And I'll be getting, you know, wanting feedback from him, from Nick, on what they think of the solution, some improvements that could be made, right, from either how we support it from the, you know, our group side, or from the vendor side, some kind of wish list items. Typically on this job, we have Colette Thomas is basically overall tech at the job site level, and she manages multiple jobs for us.
What's her title?
She's a VDC manager.
Okay.
Two for us. So we have two different levels of manager, and she's pretty advanced. She's been with me for a while. So I think right now she might be managing three or four jobs. One thing that's unique to us is we run fairly lean for our size. And so once you get, you know, he talks about training up and mentoring. Once you get within our group, once you get to like a manager two level, you're managing a lot of people at lower levels on the chain and different that are doing, you know, working in different capacities to support projects. And then you're also managing multiple projects. And then even within our group, you're managing different initiatives within the group. So you might be responsible for our BIM coordination process or standard, or how we're improving something that we're doing on the field tech side. Or so you're involved in lots of different levels of what we're doing within our kind of tech and innovation group. But Colette's out here. She's probably the day-to-day interface more than anyone with the team. What are the needs? What's happening? You know, how are we executing? Are we having any issues with the sub from the technology side? How's the tech informing the build? If there are things that we missed or things that need to be corrected, all that would route through her. Nice. And I kind of stay more at the high level, as far as I don't get super involved with jobs when I have a manager too on a job.
And that's what Colette's at.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. So that's their baby. I'm just there to support them. You know, I'll come in and out as I need to, but it's kind of, especially with individuals like Colette, it's just, I don't even really have to think about much.
And she's a dedicated resource here. Like, yes. This is the only job. And kind of walk through your interaction with her and just what that's looked like out here.
Yeah, so she's obviously the head of, we do like the BIMing and stuff, the BIM models and for the interiors, and she can obviously do the exterior stuff. I mean, she did the sink row. It's an automated kind of how they show the skin going on the building and stuff. But yeah, we're working with, I work with Colette all the time about, I mean, just an example, the elevator guys just started out here. They're doing their overhead on level 10. They was never BIMed. So she's looking on the BIM model to figure out where we can put it, where we can get these guys started as soon as possible. And it's not going to conflict with anything down the road as far as when they install, whether it be ductwork, a light fixture, or whatever. But yeah, she's, this isn't the first job I've been with Colette.
I was just going to ask I'm assuming there's kind of some synergy there of mm-hmm. those bigger jobs yep. that you guys have been on.
Yeah, that's probably my fourth job that I've been on with Colette.
Oh, so, nice. Yeah. Awesome. That's awesome. It's interesting too, jobs of this size and scale. When you made a comment, or you said earlier about R&D, what does that look like? I mean, obviously the job's probably pre-con phase. You're going through some of the kind of strategy, what you guys want to do out here. Like, talk a little bit about that dynamic of when you hear about something, and obviously, hey, Zach's a resource to get some feedback on of how long is it on that job? Is it more of a, hey, let's test it before it gets out on a job? Like, walk through maybe an example that kind of comes to mind.
Yeah, so for us, we have kind of a standard tech stack, and that's technology right there. We're using from pursuit planning, logistics, scheduling, estimating, all the way through to handover, right? And those will be products that typically are enterprise wide products, or products that we've based a lot of our training and SOP on. All of our people within the group are trained on those products, so we can cross collaborate, resource share, and that's the tech stack for the Austin Edge group. So all the technology, the deployment of technology, the R&D integration, all that's happening within one group. So we don't have kind of a set separate R&D group or separate integration. It's all within that same bubble. And that kind of goes back to me talking about us running pretty lean and wearing a lot of different hats. And so what happens is, at our upper manager level, those people are typically involved in a lot of the R&D things we should be changing, things we should be looking at, you know, part of the process, right? So they're out there, depending on, some of them are more interested in AR, VR, some of them are more interested in some of the field technologies. They might be more interested in the scheduling tools, things that could enhance how we do coordination. And so they're out there kind of running at that, sometimes at an individual level, right?
When you say they,
I'm talking about a person within my team.
Your team, Austin Edge team.
And so we have dedicated resources in each of our business units. So we have basically a business unit lead, which is typically a manager too, in Orlando, Dallas, Houston. Right now we don't have one in Austin, and then typically in California. And then we might have dedicated individuals for like our aviation group, or soon in our, now we have dedicated individuals in our advanced tech group. But all of us work as a single team, right, in how we're looking at tools, vetting tools. There's a lot of cross collaboration. We're not regionalized. So we're continually meeting on different initiatives, and those will have groups or subgroups. And then information's coming from the field. So typically we're looking at our tool stack, looking at, you know, we're always basically testing new solutions. A lot of them never make it even to POC stage, but we test them. And even software that's new, every year we're revisiting. Okay, where are you guys at? What did you do in your R&D? What's coming down your pipeline? How have you changed your UI? Like, we're just want to stay current with what they're doing. And this happens a lot where we might pivot on a tool that might be an enterprise-wide solution for us, and we'll flip it in 1 year. Like, we have no problem, you know, like, turning the light switch off on it. It's not like something where we're so, like, entrenched with all the training we've built. We keep all that really flexible so we can change it at, like, a moment's notice if we need to, if we think something's markedly better, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other way R&D gets informed is from the field. So, like, Nick's got a solution he likes out here that has to do with cranes. It's not uncommon for someone to bring a solution to us, right? We have people who are coming in from other companies. Hey, I was using the solution at company XYZ. Hey, this person contacted me. I've been kind of looking at this on my own. It's something that interests me. Could we look at it as a team? Mm-hmm. And then we'll bring those solutions in and kind of vet them.
I got a lot of questions to that.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm, from Zach, your perspective, we're talking about standard tech stack and how much that, mm-hmm. there is some flexibility there. How much in that, from the field perspective, input have you given over the course of your career? Like, we talked about, you know, a bunch of different jobs.
Yeah, so Todd kind of hit on it. We kind of think of ways that, oh, I could do this better if I would have done this. And then we kind of see, sometimes we bounce it off Todd if there's usually a type of software, a type of technology that we could use. And definitely you see that with a lot of the younger superintendents now. So a lot of these older guys, they kind of like, oh, technology, blah, 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 whatever. Heck, we've got so much technology now that we use out here. I told you guys about the app that we use for deliveries.
Yep.
It's just the buy-in of the subs and making sure that we actually implement it into their contracts, that they have to use that type of software technology that we're using. The drones that we fly all over the jobs just for different reasons. I'm always trying to find a new technology that we can use to help us be better builders, for sure.
Have you seen, over the course of all those jobs, have you seen the tech stack change from job to job to job? Like, and how has that felt? Has it felt, you know, jarring, or has it felt pretty good each?
Yeah, definitely within like a few, probably 5 or 6 years ago, it's really gotten off. It's really hot and heavy, mm-hmm. In the industry now. When I first started, probably not so much. 11 years ago, how old's drone deploy now?
I mean, right along with you, 11 years, 13. Yeah.
And that's kind of, I was like trying to remember if we had it back then, which I'm sure we did, but yeah, that's, but it's gotten increasingly better, obviously, as years go on. And it seems like each job, there's always something new that we're testing out, and we're trying to see if it works. And sometimes we carry it over the next job, sometimes we don't. It just kind of depends on the success. And and it also depends on how much manpower we have to be able to get the subs to buy in, how much we have, because you got to have a dedicated person almost to be able to head that and manage that system while they're out here. And so if you're on a smaller job, it usually gets put on the superintendent's plate to be able to manage all these certain different things. But it just kind of, it all depends on who you have and how big your job is, really.
You, more than what we've heard, and maybe just the conversation has gone that way, brought up subs multiple times.
Yeah.
Talk about, the question I was going to ask you, Todd, was like, how do you weight the feedback from guys like Zach, other folks out in the field, like at a title level? Not to say that one's heavier than others, but obviously kind of is, right? Yeah. Just in the way that they get you, like, how do subs get weighed in and kind of some of those decisions too?
Decision-making on what tools we use?
Yeah, I would say the decision-making, the feedback that you're hearing too, like, that's a pretty, I don't feel like we could do a whole episode on that. I'm just like, hey.
So I think for us, let's just take BIM coordination out, right? That's been around forever. Those subs that we're dealing with, especially in this market, are very sophisticated. We're dealing with very large subs who have very robust tech programs themselves, right? And how they're designing, coordinating, fabricating, all of it, right? Deliver, like, everything that they do. Some of them extremely sophisticated, mm-hmm. as you would know from your former days, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge for us now is most of where the industry is moving right now is in the field tech space, mm-hmm. right? It's in the what's happening at the job site level. Probably when he started, it was more, it was BIM coordination, it was constructability, mm-hmm. it was site logistics and planning. But kind of once you started building, you were just building, mm-hmm. right? And you were, if stuff wasn't fitting or working, then why isn't it working? Did we not catch it? Did the shop drawings, et cetera, et cetera. Now the focus is in reducing the exposure, increasing the speed, And it's all about, you know, visibility on the site, right? Whether it's from us, for the us, the subs, the owner, where do we think we are versus where are we actually, right? Now we have ways that we can, very sophisticated ways that you can actually measure that, right? It's not, you're not guessing, you're not just doing a site walk and, you know, or doing a 2D takeoff. I mean, there's a lot of tools in that space, right, that are exploding. So for us with the subs, most of what we're doing on the job site is enhance speed, improve quality, right? Mm-hmm. Do more with less. To this point, I mean, the workforce is diminishing. The Al Seversons of the world are going away. Like, all that information is not getting passed down. That's been talked, you know, that's been talked about by multiple individuals ad nauseum, right? Like, everybody knows that's happening. So what's going to plug the gap? And for me, that's technology. But to this point, you have to get the field to use the technology. Right. And if they're already stressed with either manpower and speed, then it's got to be really good to get them to like want to use it or add it to their plate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the challenge right now would be for the subs, because we're putting a lot of stuff on the subs right now from a tech space that are involved with QAQC, but we need them, and it's all to help them, but they need to look at it.
Yeah, I was about to say, this technology, I mean, it's another QAQC step in the process to double check them. So they have their own internal QAQC, and then they have this technology that we've been using to double check them. So most of them do buy into it. I mean, obviously their money's involved, and if it's too much, then obviously they frown upon it. But it's they usually definitely want to be involved, so they know, because last thing you want to do is allow rework, because it costs them money, time, and puts them behind schedule, money out of their pocket. So
it's interesting. I think hearing you talk about this just the gap that, like, hey, you're saying, hey, like, hopefully technology will kind of fill that gap and step in.
It's got to fill the gap.
I mean, it has to, right? Yeah. I'm curious, 10 years ago, and this is a really good kind of window that we're kind of peeking through time, did you come into the industry knowing kind of technology? I think you said it really well, Todd, of like, hey, the first wave was kind of what's just called office coordination type workflows. Now, last 5-7 years have been much more field-based workflows out. Like, did you know some of that coming into the industry? Like, when you kind of just start, like, would you agree with that kind of wave of like kind of where it is now at a field-based level versus maybe an office level? Like, coming into the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, obviously I went to school and we had the BIM, we had the Revits. We didn't really know about drones or anything like that. But yeah, so kind of what Todd was saying, the stuff that's kind of been around forever is what I knew, starting out in the industry. And then increasingly, obviously the iPhone really hit off with that, but like just with the different apps and stuff that you can use with, I mean, they've got pretty much an app for everything now in construction, it seems like.
I was just going to say, that's almost the shadow of the field side of it. Is like, it's never been easier to make an app, make a software tool, and now you're kind of muddling through all the different options. I'm curious, Nick is the other senior T, right?
Yeah.
Older, younger?
Older.
Okay, so you're at a kind of an interesting spot here. You got younger superintendents coming up underneath you.
Yeah.
You got Nick, who
he's 38 and 37, 38, and I'm 35. So we're labeled the young.
The youngs, right? Yeah. We don't get into age here very often.
Yeah,
but talk about, do you feel like seeing kind of some of the younger superintendents come on board, are they eager to use some of those different tools? Is it kind of I see my older mentor, and I would probably say you're maybe a mentor in that kind of capacity, but like, it's a really interesting dynamic right now of, I would say, older superintendents probably coming into a 5-10 year transitional period, you sinking your feet in, saying, hey, I got quite a bit of runway left, and the new kind of super, like, you're in kind of that middle ground, right? And maybe talk a little bit about the relationship with maybe older folks, and then also kind of the young superintendents, because, man, it's an interesting time to come in at a field level. I think you said it really well, Todd, of like, there's so many tools, but then like, how do you cut through them?
Yeah.
What's helpful, what's not? Like, hey, we're here to build.
Yeah.
We're here to build buildings. Like, at the end of the day, like, if these tools help us, great, it's a win. But yeah, just maybe talk about being in that intermediate zone there, middle zone.
Yeah, so kind of on my last job I was on, we had a software or a technology that our higher-ups weren't very fond of. They're very old school. The other senior was not very fond of it either. But, I mean, these guys have just built for so long their way. And for any time that you introduce a new way for them to build, that they always frown upon it. The young people, they're just now starting. And so if you can make it faster, very simple, to be able to help them be more productive in what they do on a day-to-day basis, then yeah, absolutely. I think the younger generation is definitely picking up on it. They love it. The older guys still frown upon it just because they've just been set in their ways for so long that they don't want to change. If, why would you change something if it's worked for so long? But
it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. Right? But yeah. There's more than one way to build a job. And so there's tools that you can use to make it easier, or you can stick with the ways that kind of take you a little bit longer and mm-hmm. Where you're not as productive, I guess.
Would you say that any of the younger generation coming up is too reliant on tech?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, okay. The phone is one, but that's a different story. But putting your eyes on it is definitely the number one kind of way to check something. But if we're looking at pictures or whatever it might be, if we're looking at a computer screen, I always tell them to verify and go out in the field, verify that it's installed correctly. I don't mind if you look at the picture. Mm-hmm. But another thing is the picture says 1,000 words. So we use a lot of this stuff for liability reasons, to cover our butts. Hey, here's what we did on this day. Look at this picture. Why are you telling me blah, 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 this? I mean, we can use that for financial reasons, scheduling reasons. I mean, the technology in that regard. And that's what we use a lot of that stuff to be able to, before we close walls. I mean, we've got pictures of all the in wall or whatever it might be. But
I got plenty in my hopper over here, Adam. So you better get your time in here.
Would you say that, you know, looking at the younger generation now, and we touched on earlier kind of the beginning, you know, I was in the same boat, beginning of our careers being very, I think actually for as long as construction's been around, it's been a feet to the fire, just sink or swim type thing.
Yep.
Do you see any tools that are now available on your job sites that would have sort of shortened that learning curve for you in that sink or swim phase of your career? Anything that the younger generation now has that, you know, maybe get them up to speed a little faster on the building process?
Yeah, definitely. So we're in the dry end stage right now on the job out there, but when we were doing structural deck pours and stuff, we do the drone flyovers. We're able to take snapshots of what is installed prior to pouring. Mm-hmm. And so every morning before we go out and pour, we go over the list of items or something, the deficiencies, I guess you would call them, mm-hmm. maybe a sleeve or something. But a lot of times these guys have no clue what this stuff is. Mm-hmm. And so if we can show them on a screen, hey, this is what this is. Hey, this is what that is. This is what this is supposed to look like. It definitely helps for sure. And that's back then, you don't really have the imaging, the capabilities to be able to do that and mm-hmm. show someone. It's basically on you getting thrown out in the fire to be able to learn it.
I had a superintendent my first job tell me to go out and make sure all the drag bars were installed properly.
Yeah.
I was like, what the drag bar? I had to walk outside. Hey, rebar contract.
Hey, can you tell me what a drag bar is?
Yeah,
tell me what a drag bar is. You bring up an interesting point, Zach, because we've heard it on previous seasons before of just kind of the technology of reality capture helping bridge the gap of experience from older superintendents mm-hmm. to younger superintendents coming up and being just like, hey, look at this picture. Look at the phases of how this wall got installed. Look at the phases of how this structure got installed. And truly being able to like pass the knowledge torch from an office or from a capture sequence of like, hey, this is the end. Let's now work our way back in time. Let's see how this looked. And I thought that was it was kind of this company's mentality of like, hey, before you go, older superintendent, like this is how you can pass on some of your experience of, hey, look at this image, but here's what's in this image. Here's what this means. Here's what some of the sequencing of it is. And here's what we missed. I just thought it was fascinating. I was like, I never had heard of technology kind of bridging that gap from an older generation to that younger in a way that's like, oh, that's very practical, tangible.
I tell a lot of my assistants that the best way to learn is literally you take the iPad out there with the drawings and you look and you see what's being installed. You're not going to know everything. I didn't know anything when I started, but that's how you learn is you look and see, oh, this is where that wall shows. This is where the wall cavity is supposed to be. This is where that electrical box or whatever. But getting out there with that iPad and being able to reference the drawings and seeing what's installed is probably the number one way of learning. Mm-hmm. Not only using the contract documents, but the shop drawings as well from the subs that we get. Because a lot of times they come, we bring in subs and some of the younger assistants have no idea what they're what their job is or what their scope is, and so they look at those shop drawings and reference what they're doing out there in the field.
I think there's we're talking a lot about technology. There's still very much a human element to construction.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that,
but it's,
you know,
yeah,
I was
both.
I was teaching, you know, superintendents or engineers, interns, whoever under me is like, take those things out there, but also go find the foreman and ask him a question.
Absolutely.
Right? Make a, you know, be a friend, build a relationship, because somewhere down the road, they're going to be like, hey, you guys F that up. Like, they can help you out.
You got to remember, at the end of the day, you're hiring them. Totally. They're the experts.
Yep.
So they're the reason why you hired them. Yeah. So ask them questions.
You haven't swung a hammer on this job yet, have you?
No.
Okay.
No. The other thing I want to add is that, you know, from a tech, like when I go back to the story of exploding the details, right? So some of these job sites are so large, like even just the picture, like to his point, looking at the deck, right? Well, when he was starting and that we didn't have that technology, you're at eye level, right? You have your perspective of what's out there. It's totally different than basically looking down on it, right? And I think about some of our job sites now, you know, there might be, we have a job site that's 1,000 acres. It's like, how do you really assess what's happening on the job, right? But I mean, if you walked it, it's going to take you more than a day. And then, you know, after you leave, it completely changed mm-hmm. over the course of a couple of hours. So these guys are such planners about what's happening and where they need to pivot and how, you know, what we need to do to kind of stay on schedule. I think the visibility of, like, holistically what's happening at the job site, I think that's a huge win for, and like really low hanging fruit if you think about it. It's just an image in the sky. But like, I've seen superintendents take like a site image like that. They can do more with that site image, right? And mm-hmm. one of the funny stories I have is when I first came to Austin, back then it was coordination and we were doing a lot of modeling, right? Just modeling. The superintendent, I don't think it was Al, but it was another very advanced, very smart superintendent, came to me and he wanted to build, we were doing this building downtown, super tight lot line. He wanted me to build this extremely complex foundation. It was like multi-level down in the ground. So I spent like a week building this foundation. And I'm like, you know, all excited about it. He comes into the office and he's like, you got that foundation built? And I'm like, yeah, I've got it built. He's like, hey, let's pull it up. And we pull it up and he says, flip it over. And I flip it over to where now he's, you know, like 100 feet in the ground and he's looking at it from underneath. And he's like, all right, I got it. And he left. And all he wanted to do, and I talked to him about it later, is just, he couldn't visualize how like the dense, like how close the piers were going to be, what was going to be going on, and then the shoring and like seeing it underneath, getting him that perspective. It's kind of like the exploded detail. Like mm-hmm. he's like, then he had it in his mind, what it looked like, and he could plan it.
Yep.
And that's all he wanted it for.
Yeah.
It's crazy that I'm going to categorize some tech here. Like, would you say visual, like call it technology that helps you visualize? Is that
I mean, absolutely
king, right? Like
absolutely.
I think you said it well, Todd. It's like 1,000-acre site. Come on. Yep. I mean, how are you and the team of field staff here, like, able to coordinate logistics, get people where they need to be without that? Like, to me, that seems like, and I'm not going to categorize for y'all, but like a no-brainer. Like,
yeah.
Would you say that kind of feels like the, hey, if I don't have that on the next job, that like we're really going to be taking a step backwards?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely with some of the technology, if we didn't have it, it would definitely make a step back. And what's going into these deck pours, I mean, I rely so much on that software of what making sure that we have what's installed. If we didn't have that software, I'd be out in the field looking, visually walking each and every embed, each and every sleeve. But with all this technology, to be able to look at it on a screen, not have to walk out there at 7-8 o'clock at night, obviously that allows us to be with our families more and to work on other things that are probably a little bit more important. So we can go faster and be more productive.
I was going to go back to one thing that Todd said too. It's amazing how much of an impact just the change in perspective has had. You know, like without that, you know, whatever it is, whether it's a, you know, I've taken cameras and whatnot, stuck them up in places that I couldn't mm-hmm. get to.
Yep.
And it's been like, well, how the hell did we do that before? Well, we would have been tearing shit out to open it and
yep.
and try and see something in there. You know, you talked about the drone image and it's like, yeah, now you get the full view of everything as opposed to trying to look at it from, you know, 5-11 on a good day, you know? So it's just a, It's an amazing thing.
Simple, and to his point on the concept. Old school, I mean, truthfully, most of them don't need any of the technology to build. Mm-hmm. Now, could we hit some of our schedules? Maybe, maybe not without some of the technology. But these guys, I mean, most of the time, they've got one or two options of how to build it in their head, right? Mm-hmm. He's probably doing the same thing. I mean, yep. that's the rubber meets the road with our superintendents, right? That's where the magic happens. So it's like, we just need to enable them to understand a potential problem so they can plan for it,
yep.
Right? We're just trying to basically be proactive. Like, hey, you might want to look at this. Hey, this might be happening. Hey, this didn't get, you know, this didn't get done. Hey, this is behind. And pretty much stay out of their way. Like, we're not trying to take away really any of their process. We're just trying to give them more information to be smarter when they're planning the work, right?
Yeah, I mean, the tech in a lot of ways helps you find the problems easier, in an easier way, as opposed to like, oh, we're pouring tomorrow and now I have issues on my plate, right? Yeah. Like, that's never, you know, you don't get to go home that night,
yeah,
kind of thing. So, yeah, highlighting those things earlier.
Yes. Adam needs a button over here. I wish I had a little sound button. His big thing is feed the field.
Yeah, like,
I need a sticker of that.
Yeah.
I mean, would you agree with that, though? Like, it sounds
Look at where all the tech companies are going.
Yep.
So, you know, we abandoned the design world. Mm-hmm. Like, the architects were never going to use Revit. I mean, some of them did, but I'm saying it for design.
Okay.
5% of them may be, you know, really advanced Revit users maybe for design. It was all about the documents.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we weren't carrying really any risk, right? We look at the GCs and everything that they're touching, they're carrying all the risk. I'm like, and so that's, you know, that pivot point happened. Now everything is like, okay, forget the back of house, the core service. We got to inform the field. Like, we got less people, faster schedule, more complex buildings. The architects have less time to do, you know, their document times have been shrunk. So you're getting, you know, all manner of quality as far as your construction documents, like what's going to be in there or not, depending on how stressed they were.
Yep.
So you got all those gaps have to be filled, and they all fall on us to fill them.
Yep.
Right? The owner is expecting, if it's missing, we got it. If it's not fully detailed, we got it. We're going to figure it out, and we're going to do it on their timetable, and we're going to get it done when they need it opened. So we have to figure out ways to plug those gaps.
Mm-hmm. Man, we could just camp out there for a while too. That's I'm curious. I want to, guys, this is, we're hitting the peak here. I'm curious to ask maybe both of you guys barriers of entry to get the full value out of technology. Like, how would you encourage some other superintendents listening to this? How would you encourage some folks on kind of the office side and maybe the procurement of technology? Like, the barriers of entry, I would say, have never been easier, but the sifting through different tech and different innovation, you know, tools, like, what would you say to someone that's either on the fence or like, I don't know, or a younger superintendent's like, I want to use everything. Like, yes, this thing tomorrow, this thing the next month. Like, how would you encourage superintendents? And then I kind of want to hear your thoughts on the office side.
From a superintendent side, I'd say that, I mean, don't dog it until you try it. And you have to have a team that's going to be willing to let you try it. I mean, this stuff isn't free. You know what I mean? You gotta pay to be able to try it out. But that's what we've basically done. I mean, wouldn't you say, Todd? I mean, basically, we've gotten recommendations from other people who used it. We implement it on our job. We see if we like it. Some people do, some people don't. And then it goes down the road with us.
How much do you talk to other superintendents, either within the organization or outside your organization, about what they're using and what their sort of wins have been?
A few. Not as much. I've got my brother and my his wife are actually work for another company here in Dallas, and they use a lot of the same stuff we do.
Sure.
But it's, yeah.
Don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah.
Todd, what do you got?
I think if you're trying to implement technology, you know, whatever space you're working in, for you got to be persistent and you got to have passion for it. So for us, you know, we've had, and it doesn't happen as much now, it happened in the early days where we might get set up on something that we just think, you know, we got to have this, like the either the project management team, the field team, like they need this tool, and we get all behind it and we vet it and we get it out there and they don't need the tool. So I think a lot of, you know, you talked about going to the field. I think the fastest way you can advance your career on the VDC, BIM, technology side of the business is go to the field. You have to understand the problem. I mean, we're all basically just problem solvers, right? That's how even we look at what we're doing. We're problem solving. So if you don't really understand what the problem is or where we're having an issue, then you're not going to be able to select or set up on an effective solution to solve that problem. You're already going to get a hand to the face in most cases, right, when you initially go out there to add something to their plate. So it better be good. You better have vetted it. You better have thought about all the different ways it might work. And guess what? If you know it should happen and you get told no, that's where the persistence comes in. Like, you keep pushing through. Understand the problem. So get out there and understand the problem. There's too many of these people that they want to stay in the office. They don't want to walk the job. You can learn so much from the supers, from the subs. If you're just doing BIM coordination, you can learn more from the trades on how they put that work in, mm-hmm. what their challenges are, and then mitigate that the next time you do coordination on your next job. And as soon as you start solving their problems, then you get immediate traction, right? And then these MEP subs want to work with that person. They want that person on their next job. They seek that person out, or they seek Zach out for different reasons of how he manages the job. And that's how you start building your brand in that space. But you have to understand the problem, and then you go find the solution. And if you know it's the right solution, you got to be persistent. You got to have passion for it. If you're lukewarm on it, you're not going to be able to last. Like, you're not going to be able to push through.
You talk about two kind of categories, if you will. One's that, you know, the 30,000 foot view. It's like, this as a business, we're going to centralize, we're going to push, you know, it's mm-hmm. got to be something that the field ends up picking up. And then you have the other type that's, you know, reliant on the field picking it up. Otherwise it's going to, you know, go to the wayside. What would you call those two categories? Like, is one more of like a full on enterprise management solution type thing, and then others are point solutions? Is there a category for each of those in your mind? Or, you know,
I mean, they're both point solutions,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, this tool might be something that's an enterprise deployment level tool, right? And so one tool, a tool that we're, you know, we're not saying the name, he's mentioned it, is this tool we pushed aggressively, even to the point of funding the tool, because we knew the projects didn't have it in the budget to fund the tool, mm-hmm. because this tool we know will reduce our risk. There's just no way we can accomplish this with people. Now what we need to do is get people to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we're at the inflection point we're at now is we need to get the trades to look at it. As soon as the trades start engaging with it, then it's off to the races.
Yeah.
Our supers are engaging with it now. Some of these other tools, those might be where we have two or three tools in a space. They're all very close. And then we're relying more on an end user, right? Like, I like the way this feels better. This is better on mobile. This is more intuitive. It's easier to pull up the model on this tool than tool B. So then we're really relying on how they interact with the tool more to kind of inform where we're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
And those we might, and sometimes we'll do like we did, we'll do a parallel deployment where we have two different tools. And we'll take people who are very kind of tech forward and already kind of over that hump with like wanting to use tech and say, okay, we're going to deploy this on the back. You kind of play around with this while you use our main tool. And tell us if you think there's any marked improvements that we should start thinking about maybe next year as like phasing this out or pushing the deployment further. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we're doing the field R&D, where we're getting that feedback from our kind of our super users or our already kind of tech, the people like he's mentioning that really want to use the tech, just give them the tech.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll rely on their feedback to kind of feed what we think we need to do.
Fellas, I want to respect your time. I got one more question. Sure. You got anything else you want to?
No. Go for it.
I think my question counter is like 7-2 over there.
Okay.
I'm trying to even it out over here. Adam's like trying to find his mic space.
You're good.
Go for it, man. I'm curious as we kind of land the plane, like what's been well out here? Like what's been a big win story that you, as you look at your scoreboard and you go on to the next one, like what's been a big win from the innovation and tech side out here that maybe surprised you or maybe you didn't realize kind of coming into the job that you've seen kind of maybe a little over halfway here that you've just been encouraged by?
Yeah. I mean, knock on wood, this project has been my best project that I've been on. Kudos to the team that we have out here, but we're ahead of schedule right now. The structural side of it has gone very well. We were 2 weeks early, even with all the rain that we had in January. I think we had 18 rain days out of the month of January. So for us to finish 2 weeks early, still huge. But that just goes back to what the technology that we were using to be able to get to that point. So like I talked about the drones for the structural deck pours. I talked to obviously you guys. I mean, just this morning in the sub meeting, I was using your guys' technology to be able to show my logistics plan on what's happening here, what's happening there. Hey, this is to this point. So yeah, I mean, we couldn't have been where we're at today without those types of technology. I mean, yeah.
And it's kind of like the small things just build up over time.
Yeah,
like
you don't necessarily. I'm not even like thinking of everything that we use out here, but yeah, without it, it would definitely slow us down for sure.
That's what's interesting is like in the moment you're blowing and going, yeah. Getting you know structure up, and you're kind of look back and you're like, wow. I mean, 2 weeks, that's pretty significant, especially yeah. with all the adversity of just weather alone.
Yeah.
Todd, what are you got?
I do know you're trying to land a plane, but I did think of another one.
Adam's pulling up on the thrusters.
Yeah. If you think of, you know, the rest of this job or even your next job, do you, from a field perspective, have any hopes for like what kind of technology might be available for the next job, or, you know, areas within the construction process that you can, you know, think of being improved?
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. It's like, the sky's the limit with this technology stuff. I mean, sure. I'm just superintendent. You guys obviously know way more about it than I do. The AI stuff that's probably going to fix and open up a whole new side of different things. But I mean, right now we're, as far as what I know that's out there, we're using everything that we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely some things that could be tweaked, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I'm going to use them.
It's almost like just opening up the space for you to chat, interact with something, or summarize a ton of information that's like giving you a superpower that you kind of never really had, you know, until some of this new stuff. But Todd, any thoughts of what do you feel like has kind of worked well out here from your perspective and just excitement for, you know, maybe the 12 months to come?
I think pretty much everything we've done out here has worked well. Yeah. I think it's, you know, part of that's because it's embraced, right? Both supers embrace tech. We have a lot of really sharp PEs who embrace tech. And so, and then, you know, the project management side, you know, they support it, which is huge, right? I mean, there are projects where you can get where your PM side's fighting with your super side or mm-hmm. vice versa, right? He's getting pushed one direction or the other, and that's not good. So here I think you've got a good environment to succeed. And they're, you know, and then we've got a good person in Colette who's on the job, you know, filling the gap, supporting the team, figuring out what needs to happen. I think as we move forward on jobs, really for us, I think the field tech space, we're in a really good place. And now, you know, I'm starting to shift my focus to more of the documents. I'm like, what are we building off of? Is everybody, you know, how do we ensure that everybody has the right spec, the right drawing? Because that's where there's still a lot of exposure for us and everyone, you know, really. It's how do we ensure, or what's the best way we can ensure that the people out there building are using the right information? Mm-hmm. And so I'm starting to kind of, I feel like our field tech space is in a good place with the tools that we're using and some of the stuff that we're testing that we haven't deployed, but it's close. And now I'm kind of shifting back more on the project management side, really on the documents and specs, and just how do we make sure that all of our trades and our shop drawings are correct? Like all that information is being vetted and getting to the field, you know, efficiently. And that's kind of, I think, where our next little pivot's going to be within our group of just really hyper-focusing on improving that process, because ultimately that's what we're building off of.
I think back to a note you said earlier about passion and persistence, like hearing you say that of like going backwards in the but earlier in the process, like, oh man, it feels overwhelming. But if you have the passion, if you have the persistence of like dealing with problems as early as possible, think of like the shop drawing phase, the manufacturing phase, the coordination phase. Like, it's fascinating. If you don't have that passion and persistence, you're going to go earlier and earlier and earlier into issues and be like, I'm out. Like, that's too overwhelming. I don't want to deal with that. But I think those two words summarize that really well. Of like, hey, if you don't have those two things and you're in, you know, a team like yours, it's like, hey, man, this may not be the right spot.
Well, I think that's the beauty of working for, you know, a company like ours. And, you know, every project's different. We're building some really awesome projects and different, you know, different types of projects. So, I mean, just his trajectory of projects, right? There's always new problems to solve, either project related, could be team related, mm-hmm. could be trade related. And so that's what gets me up in the mornings. Like there's, you're never done. There's always something that we can solve or improve. And that's where you just got to keep pushing.
There's no shortage of challenges in our industry.
No. Know?
But they're exciting things to address now. I think when you both of those words, passion and persistence, are very mindset-driven things, right? When you think about it, it's like, hey, that, if you don't have that mindset, again, like that's not going to wake you up in the morning. Yeah. You're not going to probably think of it in that kind of perspective. But, man, this has been great. Gentlemen, appreciate you guys making the time. It's fun to sit out here and
thanks for having us.
Looking outside the window of like, man, it's cool to hear you say, Zach, like, oh, no, this I feel like is one of the better jobs of my career. And I think to think about that we don't hear that often. Yeah. And I think...
Especially with so many new faces in the industry. It's not over yet, but definitely it's one of the... I keep knocking on wood.
Boom, there it is.
It can turn in a hurry.
Well, I think it's hard, though. One thing we haven't talked about or maybe addressed a lot in episodes like these is just, like, gratitude.
Yeah.
Like, it is... I mean, that's another kind of maybe mindset shift to think about is, like, hey, we all got a lot of stuff going on. And these jobs are incredibly complex. 40-plus of your own staff, 200, I'm sure, plus of trade staff and other... like. Just to take a step back and pause, I mean, you guys just had your topping out, you know, what, a month ago. And, like, those are fun times to celebrate of all the work that it took to get to the point that you're at now. And also just the momentum that can carry you over into finishing a job and walking away. And, like, how do we not limp across the finish line? How do we, like, really take a lot of pride in getting over the finish line and driving down 114 and seeing us across the, you know, street? And be like, yeah, great job. Great memories there.
I think that's it. It's like when you see the completed work, like when you drive around the city. You know, I flew into an airport last week that we did last. I had never been in the actual finished product, and I was like, "This is pretty awesome." Yeah. Like when you see those projects that you build, it's just a whole different level of.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, there's more scars than others, but it's still very satisfying to know that we did that.
The very first thing I ever did at Turner Construction during my internship was model some edge of slab. Curtain wall embeds, and every single time I fly into that airport, I look at that slab.
That's right.
Every single time.
That's it.
It's hard to bottle
that up. You're emotionally attached.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's really hard to bottle that up. And that is what's cool about being here in the DFW area. It's like, man, you drive around, that's your backyard. I mean, those are the things you share your, you know, family and kids and grandkids. Yeah. I don't know. It's cool to think about. But, fellas, one, thank you all for the time. This is super fun. Really enjoyed just getting to catch up with you guys. And we snuck in for a lunch. I know busy schedules, and it's the least we could do for a great conversation. So appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
Guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, team. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.